Hello, and welcome to the 8th episode of the Every Mother Knows podcast. This is Angela Fusaro, and today I'm going to talk about the gender gap and motherhood penalty with our special guest, Amelia Lopez-Weeks, head of UN Gender Economic Governance. According to the latest report of the World Economic Forum, 132 years are needed to close the gender gap globally. 80% of the gender gap is linked to the motherhood penalty, with mothers taking up 3 times more unpaid work than their male partners, which often means scaling down professionally or leaving the workforce in full. It's time for a change. Hello, Amelia. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Angela. It's a pleasure to be with you, especially with the Every Mother Knows mission.
Thank you. It's very inspiring to have you here today. And I would like to already ask you our first question. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do, please.
So I am the founder and owner and the general partner, and I will tell you why these functions of my own consulting group. It's a global consulting group, and it's called MCA Partners, and it stands for Mother Capital International. And in this function, I'm the head of the UN Gender Economic Governance on supporting governments and companies, especially big corporations, about their policies and strategies to have a very strategic and economic impact, to give economic empowerment to women around the world, and especially to giving them access to capital. And what do I do with my job? I collaborate as an independent advisor and consultant in my expertise that I achieved at the United Nations on gender equality and economics. So in my journey, I started as a maternity protection expert because it's one of the main pillars of the gender equality agenda. But let's say that today, through the Sustainable Development Agenda of 2030, I'm operating around the world in more than 50 countries, together with agencies like the United Nations Global Compact, in charge of implementing these called Sustainable Development Goals, with the pillar number 5, that is the gender equality pillar, recognized as the most important pillar to achieve the Sustainable Development Agenda. And then also sometimes with UN Women, okay, because we are integrating the women empowerment principles through a strategic policies in governments and governments and corporations to mainstream value with a gender lens across the value chain.
Amelia, how did you get into this space? What was the journey that led you to your current position?
Yes, in that I need to make a little bit of long journey to my childhood, but currently I'm almost 48 years old. And I was building up this purpose unconsciously, but I've been born in the Catalan Pyrenees this 48 years ago, and I'm the oldest sister of a family of 4. I have 3 brothers, and I had always this strong sense of motherhood. And why I'm telling this very intimate situation is because unknowingly, then I became an IT engineer. I was the IT managing director for an American corporate in between Milano and Madrid. And what happened in 2003, there is a transition. I was a young girl, a young woman moved by a lot of energy and wanting to discover what's around the world and make a positive impact. And in 2003, I became a mother. And the world, in this sense, that was a transition, a very personal, but also a triggering of these big vision of my life. I had a dream. My dream today is still to be a mother and have a family. But what I found myself is that the world was not ready still to give a space for mothers to combine career and your personal life. And in that sense, I really wanted to take measures in that problem that happened, this discrimination. So then I, in that transition, suffering the motherhood penalty in my own life, I decided to move on and to bring forward a global vision by founding my company to advise countries. And this is when I started my journey in the United Nations in 2010.
Very inspiring. Thank you for sharing that with us. It's very interesting to see how we make some decisions also career-wise because of some personal situations and transitions that we go through. And I find it very inspiring, of course, the fact that you work very closely to government agencies. So from a government perspective, what are the initiatives that are being taken today to bring more gender equality and fight the motherhood penalty? Tell us, you know, if you have any specific examples, initiatives, country specifics that you want to share, that would be great.
Yeah, so a little bit the why governments are doing something, not only the motherhood penalty, but what is the entire gender equality agenda. We have to go a little bit about the stories of what is the role of the United Nations, what's happening globally and as well in any country around the world. And as we were mentioning the preparation of this podcast, what's happening historically and politically around the world, there is a change. We have an environmental issues. We have societal demands that are coming to the table of companies and governments. And there is an international structure that was built 50 years ago or more about the United Nations role about that. So I work with the United Nations. That was my decision to be part of UN Women, the Commission on the Status of Women, especially because there is a focus. We need to change the narrative. And this is what we are trying to do also from the perspective of governments' implementations of policies at the country level, that the issues that women face, that the women are facing, like gender equality and the motherhood penalty, are not only affecting the life of these women, it's not a minority issue. Women are half of the population, and mothers are the major source of human capital in any country. So when we are not putting in place the right laws from the perspective of governments and the right implementation of policies from the perspective of companies, we lose this capital. And this is what I call the mother capital that expands beyond the gender or women's dividend. Okay. It has impact in the demographics of a country. Some countries today are suffering of not having children. And it has an impact in the health. It has an impact in the human capital and development of societies around the world. But this very abstract concept is that together with these UN agencies, my specific role goes into being an expert on gender equality and macroeconomics. And in this macroeconomics, we can articulate with the ministers of work, labor, social affairs, and economy, which kind of international, international frameworks for the UN, from the UN can be implemented in order to bring the investment, the gender budgeting, and the interventions that we need. For example, in maternal health, in hospitals, in education. So what do we need to implement at the level of the countries in order to make this gender equality happen? So for example, countries like Japan, they realized that they had a huge problem of women not having children. Okay, so what they did is to really see corporations and how they could make this attraction of talent, why they were losing through attrition all of these women that were leaving the workforce because of motherhood. And you can see this situation not only in Japan, but when economies are affecting because mothers cannot come back to work. So then you find that these individual decisions of mothers around the world becomes an economic problem. And so this is where, together with the United Nations, to give validity and legality to the compliance of what companies and countries need to do, this is where the motherhood penalty enters in a systemic change of the social, as a component of social development, but as the economy. And there are countries who are tackling these issues. Unfortunately, and we are going to introduce this concept later on, unfortunately, in countries more Western-oriented, who are modernizing the companies, going away from traditional practices and not valuing not having a value in the motherhood role for the economic and social development. You see other countries that still want to have a huge importance on preserving their values as a culture. So you see like Japan, the Middle East, Emirates, for example, is an incredible example of how mothers can be part of the workforce and society without having to wait to release or change. Saudi Arabia is a very controversial topic to put on the table, but all Latin America, all Africa, Asian countries are really moving forward into implementing gender equality measures for the development of their countries.
And what are they doing exactly? Do you have any specific examples of initiatives that you can share with us?
Yes, very specifically, you can see, for example, at the country level, we have a very powerful program developed by the UN Global Compact. And this is the UN Global Compact is the agency of the United Nations in charge of implementing the SDGs for corporations. So when you want to have also a country intervention where companies are implementing these women empowerment principles, to not only, hey, the UN is something very abstract, far away, we are talking about governance. No, we go into very specific thinking to create awareness about why this is global and why your company should be implementing something beyond your diversity and inclusion strategies, and why the role of women and especially mothers is important for global sustainability. So what do companies do? Companies are members of the UN Global Compact. This is the major corporate sustainability initiative around the world. And through a very specific, there are different programs also on environment, etc. But we have developed together with UN Women the Target Gender Equality. The Target Gender Equality program is specifically, as I said, for companies of any size, not only corporations. But if you are a corporation operating in different countries and you sign to this program, you have the possibility to create a major impact in all the countries you are operating. Okay, whether you are based in the Netherlands or, as I mentioned, in Emirates, you might be operating in different countries. So you sign up to this program, and very specifically, you go to understanding what is this issue, how you localize this global mindset into your territorium, into your business strategy, and it helps companies to align the sustainability strategies that today is an imperative with what we know about ESG, environmental, social, and governance strategies put into place. And without ignoring that gender is half of our society, and what we mentioned before in our conversation, that mothers around the world are the source of the human capital of any country, companies can very specifically set an ambition through targets, okay? Very specifically. So the program goes, it's a ninth month program. Okay. And now it's facilitated in more than 50 countries. So thousands of companies are applying to this program. We have around more, almost 9,000 companies that have signed up. And they sign up to the Women Empowerment Principles. And to make it short, they want to make an impact not only to diversity and inclusion in women in leadership, in the corporate board and some management position. No, it's inserting a gender lens where you see where are your gaps through the value chain. And it goes in four management levels of intervention: leadership, workplace, the marketplace of today's entire supply chain, okay, and the community. And communities today is not something far away, it's happening. If we apply these lenses, for example, in the Netherlands context, you can apply all this community to sports, universities, for example, if you are lacking talent from a STEM. So I'm introducing a lot of concept, but this is how the governments and corporations are mirroring to make it very concrete. Setting an ambition that is globally to your specific country or regional operational context, how you make this to be part of the strategy of the company next to the sustainability imperatives, not as a small issue in International Women's Day, let's do a celebration. No, it's a corporate strategy together with the sustainability imperatives of society environment today. And then you learn how to mainstream through a very specific key performance indicators. Then at the end of the program, companies understand how to make an strategic perspective of diversity and inclusion, in that case on gender, okay? And then, of course, motherhood keeps on being one of the major issues, because although we do not understand that it's the motherhood penalty, but we can see that companies still struggle a lot into bringing more flexibility options. They perceive this taking care of society is still very much outside. We try to put this agenda on that the gender issue is a gender gap that is affecting the performance of companies, and the motherhood agenda should be remaining as an imperative also in the diversity and inclusion agenda.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And from what you are seeing today, what are the best practices that some corporations or even like medium-sized businesses are implementing these days?
the best practices, do you refer as the motherhood penalty or everything related to the gender gap that we have?
I would say everything related to closing the gender gap, but also to really contrast the motherhood penalty as well.
Yes, in the gender gap. So it's very important that this change of paradigm and perception that we are seeing, not only talking about until now companies, there was a very far away understanding what the United Nations agenda governments wanted to do in relation to gender and what companies are trying to do to diversity and inclusion. And now we are introducing diversity, equity, and inclusion, and as well as belonging. So we really, what the best practices are attached to companies really being very transparent and real in implementing all of these values. So, for example, in the component of equity, it has not only brought companies to bring more solutions in race, sexual orientations, but also in relation to gender. So best practices are the companies who are really committing to ESG standards, not only as a greenwashing agenda or public relations, but to really see that they are having attrition problems. Best practices programs that are really improving the performance of hiring and retaining talent. That has gone through motherhood issues. So flexible environment, compatibility of work and life balance. Now companies are tracking through their employee branding or employee surveys how people do feel about it. And so really active listening, active understanding that your life is part of the performance of the company. So It would go into all the strategies of well-being, of inclusion, of diversity, and it can be empowering returnship programs, making alliances with different networks, not only in I would encourage companies to not look only at women in the top. Now we have to speak. What are the issues? So companies are successful when they are really actively listening what makes their women leave the workforce, okay? And in that sense, successful strategies are the ones who are really based in equity, beyond diversity and inclusion. And these are the companies you need to track, how they make this equity principle being very tactical and very practical and very strategic on to analyze to really prevent this attrition, but especially with initiatives like Every Mother Knows, to understand that there are initiatives and programs who can make the connection that women, mothers are leaving the workforce. And then maybe some solutions can be that you have breastfeeding places, that you have different timings of zone, that you don't make the meetings, for example, in the evenings. I do recognize that women and especially mothers are still in charge of the care of the families, although cultures are changing and men are more involved. But we cannot deny the fact that there's still mothers taking care of families. And so changing all measures that are around flexibility. And one component that I want to say, maybe I'm expanding myself a lot, but the economy is changing. So all this knowledge economy, women and especially mothers can offer their services from home. So especially, you know, when you need these services, all the supply chain to start asking services of translation or marketing or whatever is all the value chain, the supply chain that we were used to be is not only in factories. It happens also by bringing all this knowledge economy is from mothers who can take care of their children, but at the same time can develop themselves if the society and companies are not yet ready to put all the childcare, all the social structure into companies. So companies are doing these decisions, whether you put in place breastfeeding places or that you have childcare facilities around, but if that's not the solution, to really make it more flexible. And Corona has helped in that sense to make companies more open, that you can have a work more based in your home, and that's good. But at the same time, we need to transition. Right now it's happening. No, in our case, we are back in our workforce. So how do you transition back without ignoring these family issues?
Absolutely. Very good points you mentioned. So, of course, most companies really mean well, right? And they want to do their utmost to support women and to support moms. But what are the challenges that they encounter based on your experience when they start looking into those issues and when they start implementing these programs or in tackling those issues, those challenges.
Yes, I do see when the Sustainable Development Agenda started, and it seems not connected to what I'm going to mention, but today's societal issues are political as well. And this Sustainable Development Agenda, it was also the first political agreement. So what happens? There are now, we wanted to mainstream from the United Nations all these possibilities of change in diversity and inclusion. And it was a huge opportunity to mainstream these gender issues, to talk about the motherhood penalty, to talk about sexual harassment, to talk about the lack of possibilities, career development. So it's very intersectional, is very cross-functional. It goes all over the place. So first of all, today I see companies and we see companies, all the experts in sustainability and in gender or all these sustainable development topics that are coming to the table. Companies really want to do something in the environment and in the societal, but nowadays, everybody wants a solution right now. So what I'm trying to say is that companies are very scared of and they don't have the time, and they're very scared about which priority do we give to these ESG problems. So companies are accused, they want to do good, but they are also accused of not doing the right due diligence. And where is the agenda? What is the agenda that comes first? And in that sense, we see a backlash also in the motherhood issue, because it's a very, as a still perceived as a traditional role. So at the end of the day, what I would encourage is not what I see more possibilities or not. I would encourage really to companies to do the due diligence. What kind of talent do they want to see? Not just for the imperatives that society is demanding on the door, but to really sit down and communicate that companies are now a mirror of that society, and to not give more space or less to a voice or not, and to really go from creating awareness and to come together. So what it's called today is a stakeholder engagement, and I'm introducing abstract concepts that are very practical. And so in that sense, if, for example, the diversity and inclusion agenda includes problems of the all diversity aspects, but as well, we need to be careful in how do we introduce these concepts. So in this, I wouldn't say I see this backlash happening in mothers around the world. The COVID-19 showed that millions, more than 50 million of mothers around the world left the workforce. So first of all, I would invite companies to become aware. What do we mean by ESG? Let's not put all in a box of what is sustainability, and that's not what we are talking today. But let's put not in one box what diversity and inclusion is. We need to frame and measure and see the facts that, for example, the diversity and inclusion agenda in our company might be motherhood. In another company might be sexual orientation. In another company might be nationality. So this is what I would invite companies. What does that mean? And then from that place to elaborate a specific strategies with a specific target to say, are we having a problem in hiring? Are we having a problem in retention? Are we having a problem in our value chain? A Unilever in the Netherlands is not the same as Unilever in Bangladesh. Of course, Bangladesh will have to operate in the supply chain with sexual harassment. But Unilever in the Netherlands will have problems as headquarters, for example, in our sexual identities. So this is what I would encourage companies to please do not fall into the imperatives of advocacy, to listen to what society is saying and crying for and demanding. And today we have the tools that society can demand for change, but to not rush and to really make this a stakeholder listening and actively explaining and to put the right experts with the right competencies in place to expand in the right strategy. So in this place, in a short period of time, in the same time you build a diversity and inclusion agenda in a couple of months, you can really set the base for a mainstreaming of value, whether you choose for one diversity agenda or another, but this is how you are really inclusive and really diverse. And I would really encourage companies to really talk about the different faces of womanhood. And we cannot deny motherhood, because when we put motherhood in the picture of a small phase of a woman's role, that is not fair. It's not just 9 months that a woman is a mother. When you become a mother, you become a mother forever. whether it's more intense physically or not. And this is at the end of your life. So it impacts all the phases of your life, whether it's in your pension, whether it's in your opportunity to participate in your career development. And this is what we are seeing. I'm insisting on really making motherhood also a topic and awareness that there is a transition. And when a woman becomes a mother, she's not only a mother with all the roles that involve. We are trying to expand this co-responsibility in society, in our families, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why companies and society needs to invest in more childcare, in more schools, in more opportunities, in less attrition, in more opportunities of attraction. But unfortunately, when we do not make it open, we do not frame the right issue that is a motherhood penalty happening inside the diversity and inclusion and equity agenda, we see that, for example, we are investing a lot in STEM. We see almost around the world a 50-50 entrance in positions, but we see an attrition that still happens in the motherhood penalty. So we are empowering gender by putting young women, and that's perfect. I'm a mother of four girls, and of course, I will push for empowerment of young generations, but please do not ignore that we still are leaving the workforce in massive numbers around the world. COVID showed 50 million people, and I don't want to exaggerate if that was global or only in the US. We need to talk about the motherhood penalty as a gender issue beyond diversity and inclusion.
Yeah, so motherhood must really have its own space in the agenda and stay really on top because of what we see happening today in the world and in the workplaces.
Absolutely. It's not on a small, because I want to insist, it's not on a small topic of diversity and inclusion. We yes. really understand the dimension, as I mentioned in the beginning. Yeah.
But it's a big chapter from what we see and from what I hear from you today. We talked a lot about governments and countries and corporations. Talking about the moms, mothers, do you have any tips, any wisdom you want to share with those mothers who are struggling today to combine care responsibilities with their professional ambitions and careers?
Yes, well, in that sense, to really hold on to yourself, to never lose trust that you are a powerful person and vulnerable, that you are exposed to the most vulnerable moments and maybe years of your life, depending on where you live and how this motherhood transition is valued or penalized. Eh? So in that sense, it will depend, for example, in the context of the Netherlands, if mothers are listening to us now from a more Dutch context, I would really encourage you to not give up, because sometimes it can be very, very dark or a very lonely place and you don't find the social support and you are pushed back to a very a small environment. So first of all, I would really like encourage you to take care of yourself. To not deny that what you are experiencing is true. It's true. You are experiencing discrimination. And the motherhood penalty is very painful and very lonely place. So we don't have yet a structure that can, we are trying to engage in this situation as the gender agenda, the gender gap, and the diversity and inclusion. But be aware that it's a very strong sensation. So to not deny your feelings and to not give up. I would really advise you to not hide this in your profile. In a very practical way, keep on being very active while you are still at home, maybe if you are being left out of the workforce, and to keep your track of development, your skills development, and to really choose for something that's meaningful to you. Not be scared. Women today are leaving the workforce not only for motherhood issues, but it's an opportunity, this gap. The motherhood penalty can be also an opportunity to reinvent yourself. So I really would like you to encourage and to trust yourself that you can make it and that we are building the bridge. 10 years ago, when it happened to me and all of us, we didn't have these opportunities, but we are making a bridge for you to be in this position. So trust and track all companies that are giving these new opportunities. If they are not built, and propose yourself. Don't be scared today to put that you are in a motherhood gap in your curriculum. I would encourage you in a very practical way. First of all, in a leadership level, in a personal level, to take care of yourself, to put yourself first, and to prioritize your desires and your ambitions, to never deny that your dreams are true and are going to become true. And then in a practical way, I really would reinforce to never leave the LinkedIn workforce, to be very, very true and transparent. Where are you in your career? To develop your skills and to refocus, and then to try to find the best executive recruitment or recruitment opportunities through programs or through other initiatives, and try to put yourself visible, but never leave you behind. So don't go back to work because society asks you to do. If your imperative today is to stay home with your children, don't be scared to do so. Trust your guts. And if that is what your body and your soul wants, follow that despite what society and the velocity, the speed of society is asking you. Because also at the personal level, that can bring also a huge problem in your relationship about you taking a break. You are not taking a break. You are taking care of the future. You are taking care of your children. And if that is what you really want and you really need, go for it. And when you are ready to come back or to combine both, do it fully with all of this desire and strength.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Amelia. I think it's a very good reminder for those women who are struggling these days to combine their careers and a motherhood experience, and also really to acknowledge the fact that it's okay to take a break, and the importance of staying connected to have people around you that can really back you up also when you are ready to return to the workforce. And we said it many times, yeah, that's a bit of our mantra as well. Moms always work full time, so, and more than full time actually, even the ones who don't have paid jobs, because we know that it's a huge amount of labor that is involved in every mother's experience. And of course, it's not paid these days, but it's really a huge one in terms of workload, responsibilities, tasks, and it's something that really stretches you, it shapes you also, and it also transforms you, and it gives you a lot of skills that when you are ready can really make you a valuable colleague, a valuable candidate for your next job as well.
Absolutely. I just want to add something very small to not take a space in the podcast, but we have to really get rid of this myth that there are working mothers and non-working mothers. You might have a paid job. You might be working in a functional and very structured corporate company. There is no mother. There is no mother that is not a working mother. There is no mother that is not a working mother. So whether it's more functional or accepted by our business world or society, you will be more aligned to be capable to combine those things. But please do not ignore. And if you have jumped into having to leave the workforce, be sure that you are learning the most resilient and powerful leadership lessons that you can bring forward in a new company. So as a general manager, I mean, the moment you know how to manage a piece of society, you can manage a piece of company, and you should have no doubt that you don't have taken a break. You are completely, completely skilled to turn to come back to the workforce, not as an entry in the secretary role and to do some kind of helping roles. No, you would be capable to become a general manager. And I'm not kidding about that. That was my situation. I became the general manager of my own company, but you see this around the world. I encourage you to see, for example, in the Wall Street, or very powerful financial companies are putting not only women in their most important positions as CEOs. You see mothers taking place, and I'm going to mention a specific names: the CEO of Citibank, the CEO of the International Monetary Fund, the CEO of the European Central Bank, Christine Lagarde, Kristalina Georgieva. Because you will see that in their biographies that what they learned through motherhood is valuable for the future performance of that company, to know how to manage people from a very inclusive and belonging place, that this is what we are asking, but especially to have performance for societies and the economies. I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying you can come back what you have learned managing your family, you can come back managing a company as a general manager.
Absolutely. So, Amelia, you're a mother of four daughters. What is a wish that you have for their careers and personal lives?
Yes, a wish and a principle, and a very strong and undeniable and a movable principle, that whether they decide to become mothers or not, to become the mother of their children should never be the factor of giving up on their dreams. I would push forward to challenge a society that still doesn't value motherhood, that still sees that value in a very traditional way. I'm not pushing for coming back to home and just be mothers. But for me, motherhood, I would wish them that motherhood was, as I experienced, an empowering of my talents, an empowering of my potential, of an empowering of the vision of the world. And they should not give up on themselves, on the vision and the dreams of their life because of becoming a mother. And even still, the motherhood penalty is existing if when they become a mother.
Thank you, Amelia. Thank you so much for joining us today, for sharing your knowledge, your expertise, the work that you do as a mother, and of course, also as a founder of your own company and as the head of UN Gender Economic Governance. Thank you so much. It was very inspiring to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Angela. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to the 8th episode of the Every Mother Knows podcast. Thank you for joining us, and keep an eye on this space for our next episode.